When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Today is Thursday, April 9th. What to know today about ventilators, from the national stockpile to why some doctors won't use them anymore. Plus, Bernie Sanders is out, what he's now telling his supporters, and how two sports organizations are working to get their athletes competing sooner than later. Then hang out after the news for Thing to Know Thursday's bonus interview with what to know about the economy during and after this pandemic. Welcome, welcome to The Newsworthy. All the day's news in less than 10 minutes. Fast, fair, fun, and on the go. I'm Erica Mandy. Thanks so much for being here. You ready? Let's do this. Some U.S. lawmakers released a new report confirming what governors have been saying for weeks. The federal government does not have enough medical equipment to go around. The Strategic National Stockpile is nearly out of the N95 respirators, surgical masks, face shields, gowns, and other medical supplies. In fact, the House Oversight and Reform Committee just revealed 90% of the personal protective equipment from the stockpile has already been distributed to state and local governments. Now, the best option is to make more. There's at least some good news on that front. General Motors has a contract to build 30,000 ventilators for the national stockpile. The deal with the federal government was made under the Defense Production Act, which President Trump invoked last month. Though it will take some time, GM will produce them for nearly $490 million and deliver them by August. Ventilators essentially push oxygen into patients whose lungs are failing. But now some doctors are moving away from using them. That's because certain hospitals have reported unusually high death rates for COVID-19 patients on ventilators. Some doctors worry the machines could be harming certain patients, though the reason is not exactly clear. Some physicians have questioned whether they're being overused, but still for some patients, it's their last hope. In recent days, we've continued to report both bleak new numbers and some small but encouraging signs, and today is no different. Public health officials advising the White House acknowledged a rising death toll in places like New York, New Jersey, and California, where daily death tolls hit highs for the second day in a row. But Dr. Deborah Birx says those numbers reflect people who were first infected with COVID-19 two or three weeks ago, before the strictest guidelines were implemented. And now she's seeing some early signs of hope that Americans are beating the coronavirus. So the best thing we can do right now is not ease up on those restrictions. She says if people start going out again and socially interacting, we could see a second wave very early. And while behaviors may actually help, experts say don't rely just on warmer weather. A new public report sent to the White House says the summer weather on its own might not slow the spread, as some were originally hoping. Meanwhile, the CDC announced some new guidelines to, quote, keep the critical workforce working. Under these new recommendations, essential employees, like those in healthcare and the food supply, who have been exposed to the virus, no longer have to self-isolate for 2 weeks. Instead, they can keep working, at least under a few conditions. As long as they have no symptoms, take their temperatures before they head to work, and wear a face mask at all times, they can get back to the job. The new coronavirus is proving more deadly to Black Americans than other populations in major cities. An AP analysis found Black people accounted for about 42% of deaths from COVID-19 in areas where that data was available. But in those same areas, Black people only accounted for 21% of the population. Top doctors say that's likely not a coincidence. Infectious disease expert Dr. Anthony Fauci says historic disparities in healthcare have put Black people at risk for more diseases. Civil rights groups, lawmakers, and the White House have all called on health officials to release more data about race and COVID-19 cases. Hopefully, that will help ensure resources and information are reaching every community. So get ready for more record-setting unemployment numbers. The U.S. Labor Department will come out with the latest today. The last report showed nearly 10 million people applied for jobless benefits over just 2 weeks. And this week's number could be the highest yet. The AP reports that's because so many states are still clearing out backlogs of unemployment applications, and even more companies are having to resort to layoffs to save money. The good news is more help could soon be on the way. Next week, Americans should start receiving the first batch of direct payments from the federal government. Remember, these individual payments were guaranteed under the last $2.2 trillion economic relief package. And now Congress is debating the next relief bill. In fact, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell wants to hold a quick vote as soon as today. He's hoping to give another $250 billion to small businesses. Top Democrats want even more on that list, though, for things like hospitals and food stamps. So stay tuned for how those negotiations shake out. Senator Bernie Sanders is officially out of the presidential race. He suspended his campaign yesterday. And that means the general election battle is now set. Former Vice President Joe Biden will take on President Trump in November. Sanders broke the news to his supporters on a live stream. He told them since Biden is now about 300 delegates ahead, the Team Bernie path to victory was virtually impossible. Once Sanders made the announcement, Biden called the senator, quote, a powerful voice for a fairer and more just America. He also told Sanders supporters he'll be reaching out to them and will work to earn their vote. But on Twitter, President Trump made a pitch for Sanders supporters as well. Trump didn't actually talk about policy issues, but he did say the race turned out, quote, same as the crooked Hillary fiasco, inviting them to the Republican Party instead. Keep in mind, right now, neither Biden nor Trump can rely on the traditional in-person fundraisers and big events to sway voters. So a lot could still happen before November. All right, we have more news ahead, but first, a quick break to thank our partner, Blinkist. Blinkist is such a useful app when you like to learn new things quickly. You've heard about all the successful people who are known for reading a ton of books. Well, Blinkist lets you do that too, but even faster. With Blinkist, you get unlimited access to read or listen to a massive library of condensed nonfiction books, all the books you want, and all for one low price. I like to read business-related books on Blinkist because I can get what I need to know in about 15 minutes and then start actually implementing new strategies right away. But Blinkist Library has whatever you're looking for, from self-help to health to history. In fact, 12 million people are using Blinkist right now. When you need a reminder that there's good in the world, factfulness is one of my go-tos on Blinkist, or get to better understand the topics we mentioned right here on the show, like brief answers to the big questions. Check it out and get a special offer. Go to Blinkist.com/news to try it free for 7 days and save 25% off your new subscription when you sign up at Blinkist.com/news. That's Blinkist, B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/news to start your free 7-day trial and save 25% off your new subscription. Now, back to the news. More data is showing COVID-19 survivors may actually be able to help those still suffering. A small study from China found sick patients have gotten much better after getting a blood transfusion. That blood has to be donated from a survivor, so it's packed with enough antibodies to fight this new coronavirus. This is especially helpful right now since there aren't any drugs proven to work. So American hospitals are trying to make this work here too. The American Association of Blood Banks has set up a webpage just to solicit donations from people who have fully recovered from COVID-19. So has the Red Cross. We have links to both in our show notes. MMA fighters could return to compete sooner rather than later. The UFC is planning to hold a title fight this month, defying social distancing guidelines. The New York Times cites sources who say the fight will be held on tribal land in California, so the UFC is not subject to the state's stay-at-home order. It's scheduled for April 18th. There won't be a live audience, but people could watch on pay-per-view. The UFC is taking some heat for this. Critics say combat sports are a bad idea during a pandemic because the virus can easily spread between athletes. Plus, if one of the fighters needs medical attention because of the fight, that'll just put more strain on healthcare workers. But the president of the UFC, Dana White, says he's going above and beyond to make sure the fighters stay safe. He wouldn't give any more details, though. And it seems like his plans don't just stop at this event. Axios reports White has officially secured a private island where he plans to host other matches for international fighters who can't travel to the U.S. So expect more to come on this one. Major League Baseball is also trying to figure out how to restart its season, possibly as early as May. Remember, the season should have started last month, but was delayed because of COVID-19. But to get back on track, ESPN reports the league is talking with a players' union about having all 30 teams play games at stadiums in the Phoenix area for the foreseeable future. But fans would not be allowed to attend games, and players, coaches, and other essential personnel would have to live in isolation. And that's a hard sell since they'd all have to separate from their families for months, though they would be getting paychecks again. Stay tuned. Costco is saying thank you to first responders and healthcare workers by letting them jump to the front of the line. The big box store says workers battling the COVID-19 pandemic, like doctors, nurses, or police officers, will get priority. There are lines out the door at some Costco locations right now since the company is limiting how many people can go inside at once. So this cut-the-line gesture should save first responders some time. They just have to show proof of their job and they're good to go. And other stores have rolled out similar policies and/or have announced special shopping times for senior citizens and others known to be most vulnerable to this disease. And speaking of, here's a little good news worth mentioning. Actor and director Tyler Perry paid the grocery bills for all shoppers during some senior hours in Atlanta, Georgia. Then some of those shoppers paid it forward, donating to the local food bank. Today is the first full day of Passover. Jews across the globe are observing this holiday. It began at sundown last night and lasts for 8 days. As part of Passover, families usually get together on night one for a big meal called a Seder. This is a unique year, though. Because of the coronavirus pandemic, many families are spending it apart. That being said, some are leaning on technology and video conferencing apps like Zoom and FaceTime to stay connected. And Christians have a religious weekend ahead of them. Tomorrow, they observe Good Friday. Then Sunday is Easter. Many churches have announced they're moving to virtual services for both. That's it for the main news today, but now it's time for Thing to Know Thursday, where a different expert explains a different thing to know only on Thursdays after the news. And this week, we're talking about the economic impact of this coronavirus pandemic, from the record unemployment to how long it could take to get back to normal. My guest today is Diane Swonk. She's the chief economist at Grant Thornton and frequently advises the Federal Reserve. She has more than 30 years' experience in the financial industry and is considered one of the most respected economists in the world, from Washington to Tokyo. So here's her take on what's happening and what comes next. Hi, Diane. Thanks so much for coming on The Newsworthy.
It's so good to be here. Thank you.
So first, big picture, how would you describe the situation we're facing right now?
Oh, gosh. Unlike anything I've ever seen, and I've seen a lot growing up in Detroit, this is the most sudden and real-time recession we've ever experienced. We actually know the week the economy collapsed, and that was the first week of March. And that was before we even started to shelter in place and have these statewide shelter in place closures of cessation of activity across major parts of the economy. We had an economic pandemic globally before we had one declared as a health pandemic. The bad news is it is extraordinary. We're talking about millions and millions, tens of millions of jobs lost. On the other side of it is that we know that this is from an external shock, kind of like we were hit by a meteor, and the Earth has been knocked off its axis. But I think it's also too important to understand that we know the virus has an end date. It's not an abrupt end date. It's an end date that will come in phases and is highly contingent on our ability to test and track and treat the virus before we have a vaccine. Medicines will be very important in reopening the economy, but also protocols and how we deal with keeping people safe to return to public places are going to be very important. So this has been sudden, extraordinary losses and a recession, and there is no V-shaped recovery. You don't just turn off a COVID-tainted spigot overnight.
So let's talk a little bit more about the unemployment. Workers have been laid off in an unprecedented pace, as you mentioned. So can you compare this specifically to the Great Recession of 2008 and even the Great Depression in the 30s? What's the impact of what we're facing now, especially compared to those?
Well, compared to 2008, 2009, which was the worst of losses since the Great Depression, will easily more than double the losses in employment from that period in time during this crisis, which is simply stunning. The hope is that we can bring those workers back faster than we did during the Great Recession. That said, our estimate is that it's at least 2 years before we get to the level of economic activity that we hit pre-COVID-19. That is better than the Great Recession, which was 3.5 years. That is not a depression like we saw during the 1930s, which went on for the better part of a decade in fits and starts. But it still is a pretty dismal situation. There's some industries that will shift entirely in response to this, some that will come back, but it will change the nature of how we do business, the world we come back to once we do get to fully reopening, which is not in for quite a while, is going to be a world that's similar but not the same as the one which we left.
The other difference I know that you've talked a little bit about is just how quickly we're seeing the peak of unemployment, whereas other situations and economic recessions and depressions, it's spread out a little bit more over time, right?
Exactly. I mean, you often don't know you're in a recession until well after. And in fact, in the fall of 2008, we had already been in a recession since January, but the initial employment losses were so small. What was so sudden is even in the month of March, before we had these shelter in place, we had the largest decline, over 700,000 jobs lost in 1 month alone for the start of a recession. that dwarfed anything we'd seen in the past. The immediacy, the size, the magnitude, how broad-based it was, how quickly it spread from leisure and hospitality, which was the first wave, into everything from manufacturing to white-collar workers who thought they were safe and working at home, who've now had their hours scaled back. Even though they don't work on an hourly basis, they're now getting paid less because cash needs to be conserved in a world where there is no cash flow.
So do you think the government's $2.2 trillion stimulus or relief package can actually make a difference? And if so, in what way?
It really is remarkable what we've seen, the breakneck pace at which we've seen both the Federal Reserve move independently and Congress move on a bipartisan basis in such a short period of time. The number of it's over $2.5 trillion. If you look at what's been done since March 3rd, which is stunning. That said, think of COVID as the iceberg. We don't have to be the Titanic because we can still get lifeboats in the water to traverse these COVID-tainted waters. But in order to think about the next phases, we have to think about what are the kinds of things we're going to need for this next phase, and then eventually put in place what we need to stimulate an economy that's in a recovery. And so I think of what the phases we're going through right now is getting those lifeboats in the water, and you want to get them in. Was it perfect? No. The speed at which the aid was passed was important, and you didn't want it to be perfect to lose that speed because so much was happening so quickly. Now we have a chance to think about what the next phases can be, more targeted and more effective. And I think that's very important, but also important to think about the other side of this. What do we need to have in place? Because, you know, you get lawmakers get weary of and leery to continue to give stimulus, what they call stimulus, when really it's aid then transitioning to stimulus, because you're going to need to stimulate an economy coming out of this as well.
So we have had a few listeners ask about where the trillions of dollars the government is promising, where that money is actually coming from. I know it's a complex answer, but can you try to provide somewhat of a simple answer that can help the average person have at least a basic understanding of how that all works?
So this is funding that goes into the deficit. The Federal Reserve is buying a lot of treasury bonds now. The Federal Reserve is also helping to keep the credit markets, which are the oil of the market machine, running. They are using, you know, are mixing their tools with fiscal policy to be able to expedite loans through treasury, which is important. Could the Fed eventually monetize some of this debt? That means like print enough money that, you know, the debt sort of goes away. Yes, they could. And would they worry about inflation in a deflationary environment? They're willing to gamble that, knowing how dire the alternative was, which I think is really quite remarkable.
What's your feeling about the argument that we should limit stay-at-home orders because that solution, the impact on the economy, could be worse than the problem, the pandemic itself?
The evidence on that is just wrong. It's unambiguous, is that those economies that stem the spread of the disease have better long-lasting recoveries. We know that from other epidemics. We know that from the 1914 flu pandemic. It's the cost benefit is unambiguous. It's better to stem the spread of the disease and fatalities than risk the panic that and long-term damage to the economy by not doing this. The key is, don't let us be the Titanic going into the iceberg. Make sure we've got those lifeboats in the water. That's the goal. And that's the best way to deal with this.
Yeah, you have to have a healthy population in order to have a healthy economy, is how I've heard it also.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, one of the things that I worry most about is that millennials that were hit hardest by the Great Recession now have to deal with this.
Last question. Anything you want to add on the long-term economic impact and things people should be keeping in mind?
Well, I think the reality is, you know, that we have to understand that this will have, it's not just a transitory impact. There will be some permanent impact. It will be an accelerant to the, you know, delivering of groceries online, you know, phenomena, the move from bricks and mortar into online hemisphere, and accelerate restructuring and retail trade and things like that. But there is another side of this we never want to forget, is ultimately we are a social species. We like to congregate, and we will find a way to be together again.
Thanks again to Diane Swonk, who, by the way, took time to talk to me on her birthday yesterday. So happy birthday. You can learn more about her and this topic in today's show notes. That's also where you can read more about any of the news stories mentioned. Just go to thenewsworthy.com, click episodes, and look for today's date. Thank you so much for listening. The Newsworthy is here for you by 4 in the morning every weekday. We'll be back with more news tomorrow. Have a great day.